Okay, so we're at Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So just to you know, remind us of what happened for the first 20 Pesukim in this Perek, which we learned last week. So the Dun, Shevet Dun, we know is looking for some more land. So we discussed that they didn't have enough land, or the land that they had maybe wasn't conquered properly and was conquered back from them, whatever the case exactly was. But they wanted some land. They sent some spies. Those spies ended up in the house of Micha. They had a conversation with this young man who was the priest in the Levi. He was a Levi, and he was a priest in the house of Micha. And they had a conversation with him. They saw the Pesel. In the end, he told them they would be successful. They went out to Laish, which was Leshem, and they scouted the city. They said it was going to be good. And then they came back with 600 men to conquer Laish. And on the way, they came back to the house of Micha. And we said last week they kind of, you know, pulled a fast one on the priest, and they brought him out, you know, to meet these 600 men. And as they were doing that, the five spies went back in and took out the pesel. They took the pesel and the everything else that was with it. This young priest, you know, sees what's happening. He sees that they're taking all of these items, and he says to them, "Hey, what are you guys doing? You know, where are you going with that pesel and all these items?" And they basically tell him, you know, shush, you know, don't say anything. Keep your hand over your mouth. Don't say anything. And they said, listen, you know, would you rather be a priest to one family here, just to Micha, or would you rather be a priest of a whole tribe? You know, if you come with us, we'll make you the priest of the whole tribe. And he said, oh, Taka, you know, not a bad idea, not a bad offer. And he went with them, and that was the pasuk chaf ayitav lev hakohen. That the heart of this priest, he was really a Levi, but they called him a Kohen because he was a priest. So the heart of this priest was good, he was happy. So he himself now took the items, and he went among the people, and he went to march away with Shevet Dun. Yeah.
What did they do with the stuff? They threw it out?
No, we'll see what they do with it. Okay. Vayifnu vayelechu. Now we're pasuk chafal. Vayifnu vayelechu. So they turn. Right, the tribe of the Shevet Dun with these 600 armed men, they turn and they go and they walk. And again, keep in mind this young Levi, the priest, is now with them. He's now going to be their priest. Vayasimu es hataf v'es hamikneh v'es hakivuda lifnehem. So they take their children. The taf refers to the children. Mikneh are the flocks, the cattle, right? Or maybe it could be flocks of sheep. Also could be mikneh. And the kevuda. What are the kevuda? So the kevuda, most of the mefarshim understand, either mean animals that were not as fast, and they were heavy. They couldn't run as fast. Kevuda might mean the possessions, like the material possessions and utensils that they had. But kevuda, according to most mefarshim, means something significant, something heavy that had to be, you know, it would travel at a slower pace, at a slower clip, than, let's say, the 600 warriors would. So they took all these things, and they put them in front of them. They put them in front of them.
The word means baggage.
Baggage. Okay. Baggage. So they took all these things, and they put them all in front of them. So why did they put them in front of them? So the Metzudas David and others explain that they were anticipating that Micha was going to come running after them with probably a group of men to fight them, because after all, they just stole his pesel, they stole his priest, right? You know, they just passed by his house and basically looted the place, you know, took all of his precious belongings here, including this priest, and they ran off. So they assumed that they would be chased by Micha, so they figured if we're going to be chased by Micha, let's not put anything vulnerable at the back. Right? So let's take all the children, let's take all the flocks, let's take all the other possessions, the baggage, let's put that stuff all up front. And the warriors will be in the back. So that way, when Micha comes with his army, we'll be able to fight him and send the, you know, protect the more vulnerable folks up in the front. Now the Radak makes a fascinating point here. And the Radak says, one second, who were these 600 people? These were 600 warriors. Right, they were warriors. The point of them was to conquer conquer Laish, right? Right. The pasuk says, if you look back at pasuk Tes Zayin, v'sheish meos ish chagurim klei milchamtam. Right? You're talking 600 people that are dressed in battle gear. I mean, these are guys ready for battle. Right? Let me ask you a question, says the Radak. Usually when soldiers go out to battle, do they take their wife and kids with them?
No.
Do they take their flocks with them?
No.
So what are we talking about here, that we have these 600 soldiers that are all dressed for battle and they've got their kids with them? Who brings kids to battle? That's how you're understanding it? Okay, so you could understand it that way.
The
Mefarshim don't understand it that way. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but to take the kids, that's crossing the line, maybe. You know? So it's one thing to take their cattle and their possessions, but to steal someone's, to steal their kids.
They stole his rabbi.
Yeah, right. So might as well take the kids also. So the Mefarshim understand that it was not Micha's kids. These kids were the kids of the 600 soldiers. So what are the 600 soldiers doing taking these kids to battle, right? You know, usually don't, bring your kids to work day, Usually you don't take these kids to battle. So the Radak says that they were so confident that they would be successful in battle. Again, what were they doing? They were going to conquer Laish. They were going to conquer one city, basically, which was, the Psukim said already last week, we learned it was by itself. Nobody was going to come to help it. They didn't have any treaty. It was really off unto itself. They were so confident in their ability to conquer Laish that they said, that's it, we're just bringing the whole Mishbacha. Right? We're going to move right in. We're going to conquer it and we're going to move right in. So they didn't want to conquer it and then have to go back and bring their family and get their family, to bring them. So they just said, we'll bring everybody. We'll put them all up in the front so they won't be hurt, so they won't, damaged in battle. Injured. We'll keep them in the front and we'll protect them. But we just want to, we want to just conquer Laish and just move right in. So that's how the Radak understands.
Rabbi,
yeah.
The Maimonides says that they were nomads. They had no permanent home. They went from place to place. So
the people of Dan.
So therefore,
so they were just always walking with their. They always had their kids and their cattle and everything with them. Interesting.
Exactly.
Okay. Very nice.
Well,
they were part of Dan, but then they were living in different places because they didn't have their own land, maybe. Well, they were in Har Ephraim. They definitely, we know they were in that territory. They may have gone to different places, but... Okay. We've lost half the shear. Okay. So let's see Pasuk Chav Beis. Hema hirchiku mi beis micha. So they're distancing themselves from Beis Micha, right? The people are leaving. They're going, they're going out from Beis Micha. Panashim asher babote, asher in Beis Micha, nizaku vayadbiku es b'nei Dan. So they're the people from Beis Micha. So they realize what just happened, right? The people from Beis Micha realize that they've been had, okay, and therefore vayizaku. I'm sorry, Nizaku. So we've learned several times, we've seen throughout Yehoshua and Shoftim, that this language of Nizaku means that they gathered. They gathered themselves together. And the reason why it says it in the language of Ze'aka is because usually the way they gathered people was by like a battle cry. Right? They would call out to everybody. They would go on the PA system and say, okay, that's it, everybody gather around. We're going out to chase these guys. So they gathered all together and they went out to chase B'nei Dan. They went out to chase, this shevet of B'nei Dan. Vayadviku devek. They clung to them, meaning they got them. They caught up with them. So, right, so B'nei Dan are running away, and the house of Micha, they go out and chase them. Presumably it's Micha also with his, not just the house of Micha, but Micha with his family and friends. They go out to chase these guys. Vayikrua B'nei Dan. So they call out to the people of Dan. Wait up. We want to talk to you. We have a bone to pick with you. Okay, the Mitzvah Stavit said they're basically telling them to wait. So they call out, Vayikru el B'nei Dan, they call out to B'nei Dan, Vayasebu P'neihem. So B'nei Dan, they stop and they turn around. They turn their faces, they turn around to greet Micha and his entourage. Vayomru l'Micha, Malacha ki nizakta. How can we help you? Right? You're screaming to us. How can we help you? What can we do for you, my friend? Okay? So now Micha, what do you mean, what can you do for me? So Micha says, You stole my peso. You stole my idol that I made. Not only that, even stole the priest. right? I had an idol. I had a priest working for me. You stole the idol. You stole the priest. Vatelchu, and you ran off. Umaliyod, you didn't even leave me with anything. Right? You took everything. You took the idol, and they took also the trophim and the ephod. They took all the accessories of the idol. They took everything. Right? Umazetomru elai malach. He says, what do you mean? What are you asking me? Like, you know, how can we help you? What is that supposed to mean? You know, you stole all my stuff and you ran away. What do you mean, how can I help you? You know, give me my stuff back. That's how you can help me. Okay? So the Malbim interestingly says, he understands because he focuses, Micha focuses both on the Pesel and on the Kohen. He says, you stole my Pesel and you took my Kohen. Right? So the way the Malbim understands this, the duality here of the Pesel and the Kohen, so he says that had you not taken the Kohen, let's say you just took the Pesel, you just took the idol, but you left my Kohen. So then I could have made another Pesel, right? I could have made another, okay, so you stole my Pesel, so I can make another Pesel, right? And the Kohen will still be my Kohen. But now, not only did you take my Pesel, but you took my Kohen also. He's the one who runs the show, right? So I have no idol here. I have no, you know, fellow to run the services. So you left me with nothing. You know, had you left me with something, you left me with the Kohen, okay, I could have made another Pesel. But you didn't. So you took my Pesel, I took my Kohen, I have nothing, I can't do anything.
Who's he talking to?
He's talking to the B'nai Dun. No, presumably the whole Shevet. I mean, maybe the five were like the representatives.
The 600 men.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I mean, I guess presumably, it doesn't identify them in these psukim. Maybe presumably those five were like the spokesmen. We learned that they were the chashuvim of B'nai Dan, right? So maybe they were the spokesmen. So just like they were the ones involved in Beis Micha to begin with, maybe they were the ones who were talking to Micha at this point also. It's possible. Okay. So B'nai Dan are they don't feel very threatened by Micha. You know, Micha, needless to say, does not have 600 armed men with him. He might have a little chevra with him, you know, a little entourage, but he doesn't have 600 men. Vayimor elav b'nei Dan, al tishma kolcha imanu. They say, do us a favor. Zip your lips. We don't want to hear you. We don't want to hear your voice. Pen yivku uvachem anoshi morei nefesh. He says, you know, we have a lot of angry people here. Okay, we have a lot of angry people. Now, why were these people angry? You know, listen, if they didn't have land, and they're maybe nomads, and they're wandering around, they're not settled people. Right? These are angry people. You know, they feel like they don't have any place to live. So you're going to insult some of these angry people. And they're going to kill you and kill your family. Right? So zip your lips, quiet down, they'll stop complaining so much. And, you know, you might anger somebody here.
Who's this talking?
B'nai Dan are responding to Micha. Right? And they're telling him, stop complaining, you know, close your mouth and be gone. You know, hit the road. That's what they're telling him.
Oh, tell them to get lost.
They're telling him to get lost. Absolutely, right?
They took it.
But they have the 600 men. They're not scared by Micha and his entourage, and they're telling him, get lost. You know, get out of here.
So they didn't take the
coin. They took the coin. Yeah, they took the coin also. Okay, so the Rashi also points out here that. The pasuk says two things: pen yifgu vachem anoshim arei nefesh, yifgu, which is a language of pegia, almost like injury, and then ve'asafta nafshicha v'nefesh beisecha. So he says yifgu means they might attack you by sword, they might injure you, and also you might be killed. Right? If they injure you by sword, you might end up dying. So you might as well hit the road and, you know, close your lips and hit the road and stop kvetching. So what happened? Chavav. So B'nai Dan turn around and they continue walking. Micha sees, he says, I'm no match for these guys. Right? 600, you know, armed men, they're armed to the teeth. I got a little family here, a little entourage. I'm no match for these guys. So he turns around and he goes home. He says, I don't want to start up with them. You know, they're right, they're going to kill me. So forget it, I complained, they didn't listen, I'm going to go back home. Pasuk Chav Zayin. Veheima lokhu esa sher asa Micha. So of course, as we know, they took that which Micha made, meaning they took the Pesel. Yes, Akohen asher hayalo, and they took the Kohen. Okay? It's interesting here that we're repeating this, right? Because we just said that they took all these things. So why is the pasuk now repeating that they took the pesel, they took the kohen? We just said that they took the pesel and the kohen. Why are we repeating it now? So the Malbim says, because this pasuk is really to show that from their perspective, they weren't stealing it. Now, if you just read the psukim until now, of course they were stealing it. They came by, right? Micha wasn't looking, the kohen wasn't looking, they stole the pesel. They basically stole the kohen. I mean, they convinced him, but they stole him, right? So what do you mean they didn't steal it? So the Malbim says, no, that's why the pasuk repeats itself here. Because it's to show that they viewed this as spoils of war. They viewed this as spoils of war. There was no war, there was no battle, but essentially they came in, they were strong, and they took a Pesel, Micha, and the Kohen.
They were just looking for land.
They were looking for
that. Is that something a
Torah
Jew would do?
No, I mean, no. This is not the right thing. Again, this is not the right thing to do necessarily, but neither is taking a Pesel or having a Pesel to begin with. We're not up to that yet. They're going to get the land in a minute.
That's Kanema.
Yeah.
Rabbi, just what Joe was saying, that they emphasize it again because it was such a cowardly act that they did. These people were like defenseless.
Right, Micha and his family.
Right, and the city that they conquered.
Oh, well, we're about to see that, right.
Normally, you know, when you conquer a city, there's a fight going on.
But there was no fight. Yeah, right. We'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah.
They were going to conquer Lachish anyway.
Right.
So
it's on the way. It's almost like it's on the way. Where it's like, so they viewed that as spoils of war or battle, even though they weren't in battle yet, and there was no war yet. And we'll see there's not much of war to begin with anyway. Yeah, exactly. Okay? So they took all these things, Vayavoad Laish, and they came to Laish. Laish was the place that they had scouted out, right, that they thought was a good place to conquer. Al Am Shoke to Voteach, as we said earlier, right, Laish was a very peaceful people. Right, they were confident. They were peaceful. They lived in serenity. They didn't bother anyone. Vayakuo sam lefi charev, the eshair sarfu vaesh, and they killed them, and they burned the city. Right, they're conquering the city, so they killed them and they burned the city.
Who they kill? The Jews?
No, they killed the people of Laish. They killed the people of Laish. They're conquering the city of Laish now. Oh, good question. All the mafarshim asked this question. Why in the world are they burning the city? Right, they want to live in the city, right? So killing the people, okay, I understand, because you don't want them around, right? So you conquer the city, you kill the inhabitants. Why are they burning the city down? Burning the city is counterproductive, and as we'll see, right? They have to build now. They have to build the city back up, right? So what's the point of this? So many different opinions in the Mefarshim. The Radak says that maybe this was like a scare tactic. Meaning that they lit the city on fire, and when they lit the city on fire, so between the burning city and the warriors of Shevet Dan, you know, the people would just run; they wouldn't even put up a fight. You know, the fire would somehow add to the scare tactic. I'm sorry.
I thought they killed them all already.
Well, this is in the process of killing them. So the Radak says that this would make it easier for them to do away with the people if the people are scared because of fire. You know, so it added like an element of fear. That's one interpretation in the Radak. We'll see the other in a minute. The Ralbag says that maybe they did it to scare others, right? Not to scare the people of Laish. Laish, maybe they could have conquered, you know, as is, but they were thinking ahead and they thought, you know, okay, we're going to conquer Laish this time, and maybe in a few weeks or a few months we'll go conquer another city. So if we burn the city down to the ground, the word will get out that we're tough, and other people will be scared of us, and it'll make it easier for us to conquer other lands and other cities in the future. That's what the Ralbag suggests. And the Mitzudas David says that, in his opinion, he says it must be that they had to burn it in order to win. He says that even though they had 600 men, but it could be that the people of Laish would have fought back, and they would not have been able to conquer it if not for the fact that they took the city down. You know, they burned it. Once they burned it, so then they were able to conquer it because, you know, whatever, either the people were scared or the people were, you know, were put out by the fire, whatever the case was. But the fire helped them conquer the city that they otherwise would not have been able to conquer. After the mitzvah itself, it says it. Now, the second the second interpretation of the Radak, and then we'll take, maybe this is what you're thinking about. The second interpretation of the Radak is the most interesting. And he says, why they burned the city? Because it was full of Avodah Zarah. It was full of Avodah Zarah. Right? It was Laish. So they wanted to burn down this, they wanted to burn all the Avodah Zarah in the city. They have their own Avodah Zarah. They're coming with Pesach Micha. Right? So what are you, you're so frum with everybody else's Avodah Zarah that you got to burn it. What about the pesel that you're carrying with you that you just stole from Micha?
Competition.
Right? Competition. You know? So what's the pshat? So, So the Radak says that even though Shevet Dan, we alluded to this last week as well, even though Shevet Dan had a pesel and they stole this pesel from Micha, they still viewed the pesel as a medium to get to HaKadosh Baruch. They weren't real Ovdei Avodah Zarah here. It was still Shevet Dan. They're still part of Klali, so they still believed in God. So why did they have a Pesel? The Pesel was somehow a medium for them to get to the Ribono Shel Olam. Misguided. That's not what we do. That's not what you're supposed to do. And the Radak points out, he says that this is really even against the Pasuk. Because what does the Pasuk say? Lo Sasun Iti Elohe Chesef. That you can't make E.T. with me, says Hashem. Gods, foreign gods of gold and silver. You can't make with me. Says the Radak, what does that mean, with me? What does Hashem mean? Lo sasun E.T. You can't make with me. Says the Radak, that means, even if you're using them as a means to connect with me, that's still off limits. Even if you're using these idols as a means to connect with me, as a means to pray to me, as a means to somehow, connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's still wrong. Still lo sasun iti. That's what they missed. That's what Shevet Dan was misguided about. They were still believing in God, and they still wanted to pray to Hashem. That's all true. But they were misguided with this Pesel. They thought that this would be a valid way of getting to the Ribono Shel Olam, and it wasn't because of lo sasun iti. And therefore, when it comes to the actual Avodah Zarah in the city, that they said we want to burn. That we got to get out of here. We can't have a city full of real Avodah Zarah, right? So it's interesting that, sometimes you have people who are misguided and they get so upset about other people. Meanwhile, they're barking up the same tree, right? They're heading down the same wrong path. Shevet Dan is heading down the same path as the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They weren't maybe that far along the path. They were just starting on the path, but they couldn't even see. So often when people are, you're steeped in your own, in our own Yetzer Haras, in our own things, we can't even see 2 feet in front of us. We just see the here and the now. We don't see what's going to happen later. So right now they're looking at the idol as a means to get to God. They don't realize that you start with that, you end up worshipping the idol by itself, like all of these people. They don't see that. They just see, oh, those guys are wicked. What we're doing, that's fine. But those guys are wicked. They don't realize, in just a few short, years, you're going to end up just like them. So that's, a musr for us. Sometimes that, sometimes we, before we give musr to everybody else about all the things that they're doing wrong, we have to look inwards and make sure that we have a clean slate. Make sure that we're not doing any of those things, even starting them, So that's, I think, an important idea here. There's a very interesting Medrash Tanchuma that the Radak quotes and others quoted as well. The Malbim quotes it. The Medrash Tanchuma says, based on the pasuk you see the Chesed of Hashem. I didn't write down the pasuk. What's the pasuk? Let me just look quickly. Chav Zayin in the Radak. Oh, L'cha Hashem Atzdaka. So we know this, we say this many times over the course of the Yomim Noraim. We say it in Slichos, right? That God is righteous. Righteousness and charity are with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're embarrassed. We're embarrassed by our actions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's just. He's doing the right thing. We're the ones who are mortified and embarrassed. So on that pasuk of L'cha Hashem Atzdaka, which is actually a pasuk in Daniel, so the Medrash Tanchuma quotes this as an example that here, think about this for a moment. Shevet Dan was starting down the road of Avodah Zarah. Again, maybe they weren't 100%, but they were going in the wrong direction. Right? They had a Pesel, they were heading in the wrong direction. And still, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped them and allowed them to be successful. Here, they're going to conquer, you know, Laish. We'll see, right? You know, they were successful in conquering Laish. Basically, Laish didn't even raise a hand to them, right? So here you have a situation where you have people doing things wrong, and Hashem still helps them. He still makes it easy for them to do, you know, to do what they need to do. The Medrash says, that's L'cha Hashem Atzdaka V'lon Boshes HaPanim. That so often, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still helps us even though we're doing things wrong, right? Even in our own lives. You know, we have Siyata D'Shmaya, we have Hatzlacha, Hashem is helping us. Meanwhile, if we would look inwards, we would say, you know what, we have some room for improvement. You know, we're not the greatest tzaddikim. We have room for improvement. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helping us, despite the fact that we're not really treating Him so well. You know, we're not really treating Him so well. We, you know, you're biting the hand that feeds you, almost, right? So here, L'cha Hashem Hatzlacha V'lanu Boshes HaPanim, also it's a good muster for us to recognize that, to recognize all the bracha that Hashem gives us, and not just to thank Him for the bracha, but to realize in the context of that we're not doing so great, and He's still giving us bracha. Right? We're not doing, okay, maybe we're not, you know, doing over the Zohar, Baruch Hashem, but we're not, you know, we have plenty of room for improvement, and still HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being nice to us, and still He's giving us bracha, and still He's helping us out, even though we have so much room for improvement. So that's one also a nice, you know, Musar idea that the Medrash shares from this story of L'cha Hashem Atzdaka V'lanu Boshes HaPanim. We should really be embarrassed sometimes when HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us out, because we're not deserving. We're not deserving of it, but nonetheless, He helps us. Okay. Pasuk Chaf, yeah.
Well, let me ask a question. It says that what they did was a disgrace, and it was a disgrace to Hashem.
Right.
So why did Hashem let them do it?
You know, the Chazal tell us that B'derech she'adam rotza leilech, on the path that a person wants to take, b'molichin osam, Hashem allows you to go down that path. Right? Meaning when people want to do things, well, we have free will. We have bechira. So we can choose the right path, we can choose the wrong path. If we choose the wrong path, Hashem doesn't stop us. You know, if that's the path we choose, then He allows us to go down that path. You know, that he leaves it up to nature. Nature in the world allows people to do whatever they want, right, more or less. So if people make a choice and they want to choose to do the wrong thing, Hashem says, okay, if that's your choice, that's your choice. I'm not going to stop you, right? Now, of course, on the opposite end, if a person decides to go down the right path, Hashem says, oh, I'm going to help you. Come, take my hand. Let me help you. Right? So Hashem will help us down the right path. But down the wrong path, He'll allow us to go down that path if we so choose. So here they made a poor choice. Right? They made a poor choice, and Hashem's not going to stop them. Hashem's going to allow them to go. Okay. Pasuk Chav Ches. So again, echoing what we saw earlier in the Perek, V'ein Matzil. There was no one who came to the rescue here of this city Laish. No one came to help them. Why? Because it was far. It sounds like the closest empire, the closest big city was Tzidon, but they were far away, and they didn't know that there was this battle going on. The Dovar Ein Lohem Imadam, as we said earlier in the parak, they had no treaty with any other nation. Right? A lot of times these nations had treaties with each other. So if you attack one, then the other one will come to help out. They didn't have a treaty with anyone. Again, they didn't need it because they were a peaceful people. They just, you know, sat and lived in peace. V'hi ba'emek asher leves rechov, and it was in the valley. The Malbim points out that the reason why the pasuk is pointing out the physical location, it was in the valley, because if it's in the valley, it makes it even easier to conquer, right? Because when the army's coming down the hill and these people are sitting at the bottom of the valley, that's it. They're sitting ducks. Right, so it's easier to conquer a city that sits in a valley. It was close to this place called Beis Rechov. Vayivnu es ha'ir vayeshuva. Now it says Mitzudas David, they had to rebuild the city. Why? Because they had just burned it down. Right, so they burned it to the ground. So now they have to rebuild it from the ground up, and they settled in the city. Pasuk Chavtes.
How come they settled? There's nothing there to settle with.
They built it up. They built the city up, and then they settled in the city.
What happened to the old people that were there?
They killed all the old people.
They buried them.
I don't know about that, but they killed them. I guess they buried them.
They burnt the corpses, the dead bodies, and they burnt all the property that they didn't want.
Uh-huh.
And they burnt the idols.
They burnt everything, right.
Everything else they
did. Yeah, right. Okay. Pasuk Chavtes, Vayikru Shem Ha'ir Don. So they named the city Don. Right? B'Shem Don Aviyam. Asher Yulad Yisrael. In the name of Don, their father, who of course was born to Yaakov, right? Yaakov's son, one of his sons was Don. He was the father of this tribe. They named the city after him. They named it Don. Ve'ulam Laish Shem Ha'ir L'Rishon. Of course, the name used to be Laish, but they renamed it Don. The Radak says, why is it pointing out here that Don was the son of Yaakov? We know Don was the son of Yaakov. So the Radak says, just to clarify that you might have thought that maybe the current leader's name was Dun, right? You know, if Dun was the son of Yaakov, but maybe their current leader's name was Dun, and they were naming it in honor of him. So he says, no, they were naming it in honor of Dun, real Dun. Right, the first Dun, the Dun of the son of Yaakov, that's who they were naming it after. Okay, Pasuk Lamed. Very interesting Pasuk here. Vayakimu lahem b'nei Don es ha-pesel. So b'nei Don, after they build the city, what do? They put up this idol. They had this idol that they stole from Micha, Pesel Micha, so they put it up. Now they erect this idol as the idol of the city. V'Yehonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe. And Yehonasan, the son of Gershom, the son of Menashe, hu uvanov, hayu kohanim l'shevet hadoni, ad yom gelos ha'aretz. He and his descendants were the priests of Shevet Dan until the exile from the land, which we'll talk about in a minute. Now, who was this Yehonah's son, Ben Gershom Ben Menashe? He was a Levi, right? He was a Levi, right? He was the guy that they had persuaded to come with him. Okay, right? Exactly. He was the Levi. Now, two interesting things.
Why'd they finally say his name?
We just went through a whole perek where we talked about him, right? And we didn't mention his name once. We called him the Levi, right? All of a sudden, now at the end of the perek, we're identifying him. Why are we identifying him here, now? So he's more chashuv now.
Right. So now he has a name because.
Meaning, until now, he was just a priest of Micha's family, one person. So he wasn't so chashuv. He wasn't so important. Right? But now he's chashuv, he's the priest of the city.
But he's the only guy who left. Everybody else they killed.
No, he came with them, right? Meaning Yehonasan, this priest came with B'nai Dan. He was part of B'nai Dan. He wasn't part of Laish. He was part of B'nai Dan. He came along with them. Right? So it's interesting. So you could say like that. It's a nice interpretation, right? Maybe until now he wasn't so chashuv, and now he was chashuv, so now we mention his name. But the Malbim says something else. Actually, I'm not sure if this was the Malbim who says this was his name, but okay. So it says, if you look at the name, it's Yehonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe. So where else do we have Gershom?
Gershom's the son of Moshe.
Gershom is the son of Moshe, but here it says ben Menashe.
They don't embarrass Moshe.
Very good. So the Mefarshim all point out that if you look in the Navi, in our Navi, and we don't have this, but I guess if you look in a Klaf, the Nun is raised. The Nun is raised. It's not written on the same level as the Mem Shin Hei. The Nun is raised. Why? Because really this was the grandson of Moshe, not Menashe. Right? So why did it add the Nun? It added the Nun to out of kavod for Moshe. It didn't want to say, you know, that it was Yehonasan ben Gershom ben Moshe. That would be a bizillion to Moshe, that his grandson is a priest of a Peso. Right? So therefore, it added a nun, so it would say Ben Menashe, that's how you read it. But since his name was not really Menashe, so it raised the nun to indicate that this wasn't really his name, but we're just doing this out of kavod, right? So it's fascinating, because on the one hand, we're sensitive, obviously, to Moshe's kavod, right? And you know, to say in the Navi that Moshe's grandson was off the derech and was misguided and being a priest for a Pesel is a bizarion to the grandfather, to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? But at the same time, it's interesting, we're sensitive to the MS also. Because otherwise, why do you have to raise the Nun? Just put a Nun in there and Shalom Yisrael. Just make up a story that it was the grandson of Menashe, some guy named Menashe. But we don't do that. We add a Nun, but then we raise the Nun.
Why?
So it shows this dual sensitivity. Number one, the sensitivity to Moshe, and Moshe's kavod. That's why we add the Nun. But we raise the Nun because of our sensitivity to MS. That we can't just write a lie. We can't just write something that's not true in the Navi, even for Moshe's dignity. even for Moshe's kavod. Right, we do find cases in, you know, in Chazal and the Gemara and Halacha that a person's allowed to lie. Mishan Pnei Shalom, you're allowed to bend the truth for peace and things like that. You know, but for the kavod, for the dignity of Moshe, it's interesting that we don't want to outright lie. We'll change things a little bit, you know, just to kind of conceal it, but we don't want to outright lie, and that's why we put a nun, but we raise it a little bit to show that really he was the grandson of Moshe. Okay. Now the end of this pasuk is interesting because how long did was this family the priest of Shevet Dan? So the pasuk says Ad Yom Gilos Haaretz, until the exile of the land. Now what's the exile of the land? So Rashi says here that this means until the Golus at the time of Sancheirev. Okay, now Sancheirev was much much later in the times of the Melachim. Right? He lived much later, after Shmuel, Eli, and Shmuel, and David, and Shlomo. Right? In the times of the Melachim, you have Sancheirev who caused the Jews to go into exile. So Rashi says that this fellow and his descendants served as the priests of Shevet Dan until that time. The Radak and other Mefarshim are they don't like Rashi's interpretation. Because they say, how can it be that Klal Yisrael, right now there's no real leadership in Klal Yisrael. Right? Shimshon is dead. Eli is not around yet. Okay? Shmuel is not around yet. So we don't really have any leadership now. There's a vacuum. Ein Melech, as the Pasuk said. Right? That's how the Perek started. Right? If I'm not mistaken. Right? Perek Yilches. Bayomim Ohem Ein Melech B'Yisrael. There was no leader. So that's why this happened. Okay? So says the Radak, how can it be that we went through with Pesach Micha, right, alive and well in Shevet Dan, and this family acting as a priest in Shevet Dan. Eli is the Kohen, Shmuel is the Shofet, is the Navi, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, throughout all this time, everybody just allowed, excuse me, allowed Shevet Dan to have a Peso, allowed this grandson of Moshe and Moshe's descendants to be the priests. Nobody said boo, nobody stopped them. The Radak says, impossible. It's ridiculous. It can't be. So the Radak says, there's no way that this carried on throughout all of these, you know, all of these righteous people until the time of Sancheirev. It doesn't make any sense. That's how Rashi interprets it, but the Radak says it can't be. And therefore the Radak says, it must be that Abgalos Haaretz means until the Aron was exiled from the land. And that happened in the times of Eli. So that's much, much earlier. Right, and already at the times of Eli, the Aron left. Eli didn't protest. Okay, so Eli didn't protest it.
Who's Eli?
So Eli, we'll learn about Eli in the beginning of Shmuel. Right, Eli is the Kohen, so he's not around yet, but he will be soon. And so Eli didn't protest. So the Mefarshim say, the Radak says, he's not around yet. He's coming. He wasn't born yet. He's coming. We're not there in history yet. We're getting there. Right? So the Radak points out, he says, listen, Eli was kind of an easygoing guy. He didn't like to make a stink. We know Eli, we'll learn about Eli's sons. You know, they were kind of doing the wrong thing. Eli didn't want to rock the boat. He didn't give them Musar. So maybe here also Eli didn't give them Musar. And what about Shmuel? So it says Shmuel, in the lifetime of Eli, Shmuel wasn't so prominent. He was a Navi, but he was just starting out, and he wasn't really taking the Srora. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't taking the mantle of leadership upon himself just yet until after Eli's time. So it wasn't Shmuel's place really to make a stink about Pesach Micha. Once the Aron was taken, now Eli's, you know, rule, so to speak, came to an end. So now Shmuel said, that's it, I had enough of this. And then he put a stop to Pesach Micha. That's how the Radak understands the timeline here. And then Pasuk Lamed Aleph, the Radak says, this Pasuk also supports me, because the Pasuk says, V'yasimu lahem es pesel micha asher osa kol yimei heyos beis ha'elokim b'shilo. The pesel micha only lasted as long as the Mishkan was in Shiloh. But once the Mishkan was exiled, once the Aron was taken, right again, in the times of Eli, says the Radak, and now the Mishkan Shiloh is done, that's when Pesel Micha came to an end, because Shmuel put his foot down and he says, we can't have this anymore. And that's how the Radak understands these psukim. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. And Amir Tzashem will pick up next week with Perek Yutes, the very interesting and tragic story of Pilegesh Begiva.